Hello and welcome to Knowing Spirit, a show about healing the soul so you can change your life. This is Reverend Shreese Thorne inviting you to journey to all that is.
Hi, I am Reverend LaVon Philharber, and today I have a guest, Eunice Rich, and she has some fantastic stories that I have heard. And I love listening to people's experiences. I feel the best witness is our own testimony. So, Eunice, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just great.
That's good. Me too. I know last time we talked together, you shared with us how obviously you were led to this neck of the woods, which once you're here, it's great. But, you know, I don't think it's the most popular on the surveys,
right?
The average person. But when you do what you're led to do, we are happy. I have noticed that myself. And then you find out, hey, a lot of this stuff that they don't have is really great, because then we have more quiet time. It's more peaceful. It's not such a crazy pace.
Right.
Now, you have a fantastic gift. I don't even think you consider it fantastic, because it's so part of you, right?
I guess.
Yeah, you see when people pass on, and even more than just see sometimes, right?
Right.
So I thought maybe we'd kind of talk about that today. And I know that when I was a gospel worker, one thing that I learned and I really agree with is that we should always have things when we present so children can understand it, and then adults can all understand it. And that's one reason why I like presenting things with stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I must be an old kid or something, because I love stories.
Oh.
Sometimes I fall asleep with sermons and whatever, but stories, I keep my attention. Okay, so do you remember when you first had your experience with that? Was it when you were a child, when you were a young adult? Do you remember?
Well, actually, my first encounter was in Sedona, Arizona. When my stepfather was dying, my husband and I went to see him in the hospital. We were actually the last ones to see him, and he'd had a lot of close calls. In fact, one time he collapsed in his motorhome, and he said absolutely his entire life passed before him.
Really?
He saw
That's
a complete
true,
vision.
Then.
He said everything, every little detail he saw. He said he probably laid on the floor for about 45 minutes, and my mother didn't know he had collapsed. He was parked at his house, and she was in the house. She thought he was just taking a nap. And then when he... But he went in the house. But later then when we went in and he was actually dying, in fact, we didn't really, we were just standing by his bed, and he was laying there with his eyes closed, and he kept trying to open his eyes, and he worked, opening them, trying to hold them open. And finally he opened them as wide as he could, and he had big brown eyes. And then he just held his eyes open, wide open, and turned his head till he met my eyes. And he started talking to me. But he'd had a tracheotomy. He couldn't speak.
So you think he was already...
His voice was in my head.
Oh,
and
so he already left then, or he was...
No, he was there. He was awake, and he was looking
alive.
Right. His eyes were locked. Our eyes were just locked together. And he started talking, and he said, "It's really happening," which means this time he was really dying. I knew exactly what he meant. He said, "It started." It's
okay.
Really happening this time. So somehow he knew that he was in the stages of of death right then. I mean, he knew it because he said it started. And a lot of people believe that there's a silver cord, and when you're dying, it starts releasing, it starts pulling out. And I kind of thought that's what he meant when he said it started. Anyway, he said, I'm really going right now, and he told me how much he loved me, you know, and how much I meant to him, and it was just wonderful. But not a word was spoken because he couldn't. And then he finally put his head back when he was done, and then he started the process again, and he worked and worked and worked and worked and worked until he met my husband's eyes, when he could hold it. He was that weak that it was hard for him to hold his eyes open. It took so much effort just for that. He was so close to death. And then he locked his eyes with my husband. And my husband is just a regular guy, you know. And then they stayed like that for a long time. And then we left to go get my mother to tell him that he was dying, that she needed to go see him. And when we were walking in the parking lot, I said, he talked to me. And my husband said, he talked to me too. And we each repeated the message, what he said, and it was almost identical, word for word.
So you guys heard the same message together.
But it's his voice in our heads. But he spoke to me first, and then he spoke to my husband. And my husband was just shocked because he never had that kind of experience. But we knew he was dying. He actually told us that he was, it had started, death, you know, into death. And that was the most pronounced, and he wasn't gone yet. But I was an adult. I was married, and I had all my children even, and when he died.
So would you say you were like in your 30s?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's interesting because a lot of people that I talk to, their gifts don't come to a head until maybe 40s, 50s. But every once in a while I meet people in their 30s.
Well, I kind of feel that he opened the door at that moment because that was total telepathic communication.
Okay, yeah. So
see, it was total telepathy is what was going on there.
So you talked to him like that too then with your mind, or did you?
No, I didn't. Now, that instance, I didn't answer. When I told him I loved him, I spoke. I didn't do it telepathically because he could hear. He could hear just fine, but he couldn't speak. And I think that really opened it. And then I still didn't, we knew it was telepathy, but when I really, we kind of didn't realize it. I mean, we knew he communicated to us, but then my next episode of that is when I was in massage class, and they were doing a dual massage. In other words, there was, I was the one receiving the massage, and there was a therapist on each side of me, and they were supposed to do the same thing at the same time. I don't know if you ever had a massage like that, but it's great.
I don't think I have. I mean, I've partaked mm-hmm. in giving them like that, but never mm-hmm. personally had one.
Well, it was really great. But this one lady that was doing one side had actually caused some trouble in the class, and I didn't know how she'd done it, but one lady, when she was working on her, actually they couldn't bring her out of wherever she went somewhere, and they couldn't bring her back.
Really?
The instructor kept working with her and working with her and working with her, and she finally got her back. And so I had said, I don't want to be paired up with that person. I told the instructor. So she had been careful not to do that. And then towards the end of the class, I thought, well, I don't have to be worried about her. I don't have to worry about anything. And so I told the instructor, well, she was one of the ones that was working on me. And when she, before she started the massage, she said, may I contact your higher self? And I thought, what? Well, come to find out, that's what she had said to people. And the instructor said, when a person gives permission, when they don't understand what they're given permission for, then it's not a proper thing to do. And somehow she, that lady didn't even finish massage school, the one that had, they had to work and work and work to bring back, when this woman had done a massage on her. And so I looked at her. She was, I was laying down. She was actually standing up. And I said, sure, go ahead. Because I knew she wouldn't be able to.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I knew I would, didn't have to worry about it. Well, when they started the massage, I felt she was angry. And she was angry because she couldn't do that to me, whatever she was doing to these other people in the class. And it was the strangest thing because she was angry, and they were, the instructor was actually talking the students through the massage. And all of a sudden, I just knew she thought, I don't have to do that. And so she skipped a part of it. And then the lady on the other side, I felt she was startled, and she said, oh, my gosh, she's not doing that. I've got to match what she's doing, because they were supposed to be doing the same thing on both sides of my body, the same massage movements. And so, you know, but I knew what was going on. And so anyway, I just laid there, and when the massage was done, I said to the, I was talking, the other one just kind of stormed off. She was really angry. And so I was talking to the other lady, and I said, it was the funniest thing. I said, she was mad, and she skipped that part. And she said, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't have to. And you said, and you noticed it, and you thought, oh, my gosh, I got it. I can't skip that. And she went, oh, you were reading our minds. You were reading our minds. See, and it never occurred to me I was doing that.
So besides seeing people pass on, you also, when people are alive, you can communicate with their soul.
But I didn't know it until she told me I had done that. Hmm. I didn't even realize I'd done that.
Well, I know animals, I've understood, talk to each other with their minds. And I know, I think the dog, my dog is particular, will stand there. And, I've learned, I kind of look at the few things, what he wants, but you can tell he thinks I'm supposed to know.
Right.
So I'm sure.
You know, actually, that was the first. I should regress, because the very first telepathic communication I had was from our dog.
Yeah.
And that was before my stepdad died, even. We lived out in the desert, and we lived way out in the desert. And the coyotes were around all the time, and he was an Australian shepherd. And the coyote started howling one night. And what they'll do is a female will call out the domesticated dogs, and then a pack attacks them and kills them. And so this, we could hear this coyote howling, and all of a sudden our dog answered. And I said, Bob, at the same time my husband jumped out of bed. You know, I mean, and he was running for the door, and he was gone. He had already left the yard. And he got back in bed, and all of a sudden we heard him. They were just ripping our dog apart. We could hear the whole thing out in the desert, the fighting and the growling and the howling, and we lay there crying. We knew our dog was just being shredded by this pack of coyotes.
How long did that last?
It didn't last too awful long, but it was long enough. It was horrific, I mean, to know. And we didn't have a begin to know where they were to find them.
Yeah, and then he would have been wounded, and
They were out in the desert.
Yep.
So we were really upset, because, I mean, this was just an awesome dog. He guarded our children and everything. There was rattlesnakes and
I'm sure that's
all kinds of things out there.
Yeah, that's why he probably even knew the coyotes were there, but he wasn't going to allow them to enter his territory.
Yeah, well, she called them out. It's a female that's in season. They call the domesticated dogs out, and we know that. We knew what was happening when he answered. We knew he was going to go, because our dogs live normal out there in the desert.
Yeah.
He stayed in the yard. When it got cold and the wind blew, they dug holes and laid down in these holes so the wind would go across them and they'd be warm.
I know one time we had poodles here. I still have one poodle, and we live right in the middle of the woods. And I heard a dog whining like a puppy almost in the woods, and somebody that was with me says, don't let your dogs go. That was either a coyote or a wolf that was tricking them.
They draw them out, right.
And I saw one run across the yard afterwards.
Too. Yeah.
They were trying to, I think they thought if they run, the dogs would follow them, but
be careful, especially with little dogs.
Yes, yes, and they're toy poodles, so they're not very big, you know.
Right. Well, about 3 days later, I pulled into our driveway, and I happened to look into our garage. The door was open, and there our dog was laying in the garage. Now, we searched everywhere, and we never, ever did find tracks from him. I mean, our driveway was dirt. It was a dirt road, dirt driveway. You couldn't even pull into the garage because it was like a step up too high for the cars because there had never been a driveway laid. But that's where we kept our feed for the horses and the dogs and everything and chickens. But he was laying in the garage. And I thought, oh, my gosh, he's alive.
Was he?
Yes. So I got out of the car, and I just went running up to the front of the garage, and I stepped up into the garage, and he lifted his head and looked at me, and in my head was, don't touch me.
Really?
Just, it stopped me in my tracks. Mm-hmm. And he was looking at me, and he only had one eye. Looked like his other eye was gone. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And I knew, not, do not touch this dog. So I filled his water dish and his food dish, and I took a broom handle, and I scooted him in so that they were close to him so he could eat and drink. But I didn't go any further than right there at the edge of the front of the garage. And he would lick his paw and lick his paw and then wipe his eye and wipe his eye and wipe his eye. And when my husband came home that night, I told him, I said, Sam Dog is something. We call him Sam Dog because our son was named Sam, so we had a Sam Boy and a Sam Dog. The dog was already named when we got him. But anyway, and he started to run out the door. I said, he's in the garage. And I said, wait. I said, don't touch him. And he said, what? And I said, never mind, you'll see. And he went out the door, and he went running to the garage. You know, I stayed in the house because I knew what was going to happen. And he came almost like right back in, and his face was just white. And he looked at me, and he said, don't touch me. See, he heard it too.
Really?
And we did not touch that dog. We left him alone, and he never moved out of that garage. And for days, he didn't eat or drink, and we couldn't take him to the vet because we couldn't touch him, you know. Anyway, he kept licking that paw, and he would lick different cuts and everything on him. And finally, one day, I saw a little speck of blue, and he had blue eyes, and his other eye was still there.
Right.
And he nursed it, and he came back. But that was actually the first time that I had actually heard telepathy was that dog.
Well, you know, I have read and I've heard that. So just recently we had our taxes done, and we live in an area everybody's so friendly. So here a lady popped in, and here I had to get going, and I didn't want to be rude. So in my mind, I just told this elderly lady that was visiting, would you please leave so I can go? And count to three, she got up and left. And I went, okay. So it was quite interesting. Well, that was just, you know, February, March of this year. So
right.
Some of this stuff is quite new. I believe that many of us have many of the gifts, but it's because the way our society thinks as a whole, we don't, you know, they don't encourage
right.
it. And but then the timing is always the perfect timing, I believe, for
right.
all of us.
Right. Yeah, we've had different beings in different houses we live in, and we just live with them. We just know they're there. We had one in a house in Fresno. We could hear, we would go to bed at night, and all of us, my husband, myself, and all of our children, in fact, my parents came to stay, and my mother wore hearing aids, so she took it off at night, but my stepfather actually heard, you could hear his footsteps. They would come from the living room, walk up the hallway, and go to each bedroom door and check, like it was someone checking on to make sure everybody was all right. Then they would go back down the hallway, and they'd actually, you could go through the kitchen, the family room, and the living room, make a loop, and they'd come back up the hallway and check at each of the doors, just like it was like somebody on guard duty.
Really?
Patrolling. And the first thing, incident in that house. So I was in bed at night, and I heard Mama. And I thought, what? What? You know? And I could hear it, and later it'd be Mama. And it was like it was coming from the air conditioning duct. But the air conditioning wasn't on. But I could hear Mama, someone say Mama. And so then we heard the footsteps, like someone patrolling and checking on all of us, and checking on all of us, and checking on all of us. And then our little grandson was born while we were living there. And he was on a, we had company, and he was on a pallet because he cried at night a lot. So we made a pallet for him on the floor next to our bed because we didn't want to roll on him. And he would start crying, and I didn't want the people to wake up that were visiting. So I would pat him on the back. But he'd rolled way over by the closet door, and I had to lean way out over the bed to pat this baby's back. So it was just this pat, pat, pat. I'd pat him, and he'd go right back to sleep. But he did this, like, all night long. So I was just exhausted. And so it was in the early morning, and he started to fuss again. And I started to roll over, and I heard pat, 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 pat. Somebody patting that baby's back.
And it was someone you couldn't see, obviously.
He went right back to, there was no, our door, bedroom door was closed. There was no one in the room but my husband and I and that baby. And I didn't even look. I just rolled back over and went back to sleep. I knew it was being done for me.
Sounds like at least it was a friendly spirit.
Mm-hmm. And when we went to leave, well, then another night my daughter had put the baby on the bed, and it, he'd gone to sleep, it was a water bed, a tall one. And she said, Mama, do you think he'll be okay on the bed? And I started to answer, and then I knew that he was going to be watched. So I just smiled at her, and I said, he'll be just fine. And so she left him there. And she said that night when she went to bed, she turned the light off and got in the bed and pulled the covers up, and she said, and I realized it was standing at the foot of the bed.
Not you saw? Or
no, she did. She says, I knew it was standing. She says, we all knew there was somebody there. But she said it. She says, I knew it was standing at the foot of the bed. I said, oh, did you look to see? And she said, no, I didn't open my eyes. I just waited till it went away.
Really?
And then it left after she got them. Now, why we didn't open our eyes, I don't know. But we could feel the presence of this. And so I said, when she told me this in the morning, I said, don't you remember? Do you remember last night when you asked? I said, I knew that it was going to stand guard over the baby. And she goes, I thought you smiled. And I wondered why you smiled when you said he would be just fine. I said, because I knew he was going to be watched. So then when we were going to move from that house, my other daughter, Kristen, that lives here, she said, we talked about it, but not just, they all knew we were going to move. And she said, Mama, did you tell, they called this being my friend, and I felt that it was a child. And I felt that that was a voice I'd heard, but through over time, these things happened over the course of years, I came to feel that this was a child in the house. And she said, Mama, did you tell your friend you're moving yet? And I said, no, I didn't tell it we were moving. And the next morning we got up and I could hear water running. And I went out in the garage, and we'd had one of those old stationary sinks, you know, that used to be beside a washing machine.
Uh-huh.
And we had stuff stored in the sink because we didn't ever use it. And the water was turned on full blast. And it was filling up with water. And I said to my husband, my gosh, why did you turn the water on that sink? Everything in there is ruined. It's no good anymore. And he said, I never turned that water on. I said to my son, did you turn the water on in the sink in the garage? Nope. I asked my daughter, did you turn the water on in the garage? Nope. My friend had turned the water on. My friend was angry, was upset. And it turned the water on in the sink. and run all those things.
I know they have a lot of those programs now on TV, and
yeah,
that's why I said before, you're lucky he's a friendly one.
Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't do anything mean or hurtful, but it was upset, and that's why it turned the water on in that sink. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning, we always set the coffee up the night before, and my husband says to me, he goes, "What did you do to the coffee? What did you do the coffee about? What happened to it?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Well, look at the coffee," and it looked like weak tea, and the water was gone. It wasn't on the counter. It wasn't anywhere. But anyway, we didn't get the cup. We had to make the coffee all over again because the water was just gone.
Really?
Yep.
Interesting.
But anyway, so then I spoke out loud, and I said, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, but we have to move. We have to leave." You know, and then we didn't have any more pranks or anything like that.
It's kind of interesting because it seems like when these people that pass on and they stay, they seem like they're bound at the place. They, you know, like you think he could just have climbed in your back seat with you and went.
You know, when we moved, I felt so bad because I felt that it was just lost. And I tried to call it to that house. I tried to, like, tried to pull it there, tried to do anything I could, but I couldn't. I consciously tried to pull that one because I felt it was a child.
Yeah.
But I couldn't.
I know I've heard a lot of theories why people don't leave, you know. Now, you once shared with me that when your mother passed on, you saw what happened when she left.
While she was going, yeah.
Yeah, when she was going. Could you share that with us today?
Yeah. She lived with us, and I felt she was dying. It's something I could just feel. It was her eyes. It was a look in her eyes. And I felt she was dying, and I actually went to her door one day, and I thought, okay, I'm going to focus on Mama and see what I feel. And she was taking a nap, and I stood in her doorway, and I just focused on her, and all that came to me was like death, 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 death. It was just like pulsing towards me. So I knew she was dying before the doctor or hospice or anyone even said it. And in fact, I took her to the doctor, and she had was dehydrated. So the doctor himself had put the needle in her arm so they could give her intravenous fluids. And the nurses were just amazed because that doctors just didn't do that at this clinic. The nurses always had to do it. But my mother was frightened and started kicking her feet like a little kid. "No, no, 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 no." And he said, "I'll do it. I'll do it. You won't feel a thing." And she didn't. So that doctor that day ordered hospice. So I really knew then. That verified. It was a week before that I felt that she was dying. And then the first week, hospice didn't even come. And so I just I did whatever I felt, you know, I should do. Gave her medicines and helped her into the bathroom. She could still do that. Well, I'd have to put her in her wheelchair and then lift her from her wheelchair to the...
So how long was she in your house before she finally left?
4 years. Oh, you mean after she died or...
Yeah, before she died, yeah. I mean,
well,
the hospice, I mean, was it a short time?
It was... He ordered hospice and she died 3 weeks later, so it was only 3 weeks.
And so I remember when you were sharing with me how you were, you know, all of a sudden... I don't know, were you in the room when she passed on or did you come into the room?
We all were.
Okay.
And actually what happened is earlier that day, I called my sisters. I called all my brothers and sisters to let them know that Mama was dying. In fact, I had a knock on my door, and I opened it, and there stood my oldest brother. Now, sometimes we have contact with him, sometimes we don't. And I thought one of my sisters had got a hold of him. And I said, "Did she call?" And he said, "No." I said, "You mean you just came here?" He says, "We're staying at the RV park in the town where we live." And he just happened to be there.
Well, he didn't know. He just happened
to be there. He didn't know. No.
Yeah,
because
I hear stories like that all the time. You know what I hear a lot is when people are ready to die, I hear a month or less people ask people what it's like to die, and they write little poems and...
No, she didn't do any of that.
Nothing like that. Well, mostly these stories I've heard is usually children. This
well,
one gal 2 years ago wrote in her diary, she, whatever, and she described her coffin and everything, and they found it, so they gave her pink coffin and the words she wanted.
Great.
Now, and it was a accident. It wasn't like she was sick.
Oh.
She died. And then a little boy, he was nine, he asked his mom a month before he got sick what it's like to die and on, and then he got sick, and then it took a month, and then he died. So it's like the universe, God, the divine, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's part of the plan. We look at death as, but really, it's really a blessing.
Right.
I mean it's hard for us that are left behind, but when we finally can leave this vessel, that's pretty...
Right.
Well, it's pretty testy here sometimes,
yeah.
I think.
Right.
I mean, I'm a happy person. I like what I'm doing. But, you know, if all of a sudden what you can't change it anyways, well, then you're free.
Right. Right. But anyway, she I got my sisters to come to help, you know, I said, you know, come, you know, help me take care of Mama while you can, and they did, but it was like on her last weekend is when they came. She died on a Sunday, and I was putting lotion on her. I'd given her a sponge bath, and my oldest sister and I were putting lotion on her arms and legs and feet and, you know, and her back, and just getting her circulation, make sure so she wouldn't get bed sores or anything. And all of a sudden, I felt people coming into the room. They were coming from all directions. They were coming through the walls. They were just coming into the room. And I said to my sister, I said, oh, this room's filling up with people. And my sister said, what? And she looked all around because it was just the three of us in the room. I said, no, they're coming. It's her brothers and sisters, and I could just feel them coming, just pouring into the room, these beings. And later on, my sister just said, oh, I love the way your mind works. I don't know what she was thinking was happening to me, but that's what she said. And then later in the day, I had to glue a toy together for one of my little grandsons. So I thought, well, I have to sit and hold this, so while the glue sets, I'll go sit in the rocking chair in Mama's room. So I sat down in the rocking chair, and I was holding this toy in my hand. And I just leaned back and closed my eyes. And when I closed my eyes, it was like my eyes were open and I could see the whole room. And I could see the people standing around the room.
So you literally saw, like,
with
what
my
the
eyes
person
closed.
Looked like when they were alive, but maybe see through them, that kind
right.
of thing?
No, they were there. They were, like, in the flesh. It was with my
so
third
you
eye.
See through them.
It was like, no, they were, like, in the flesh. But it was my third eye.
Okay.
My eyes were closed, but I could see everything.
Yeah, see, I see auras all the time when I close my eyes, and sometimes I'll see them when my eyes are open. But
no, these, like, I could see my dad, and he was kind of leaning there, kind of casual, leaning in the corner. And then my stepdad was at her head, standing at her head, and she had lost one of my brothers. I never met him, because he died before I was born, when he was 2 years and 8 months. And he was standing at her feet, at the foot of the bed. And then standing hand in hand beside her bed, she had a twin brother and sister. They were standing there holding hands. And when I looked at my dad, he nodded his head and smiled. And they looked at me and smiled when I saw them. And then the other side was really crowded. It had, and those were more like... like you're saying, like see-through, like...
Okay. They call them cellulettes or something like that?
I don't know. I knew who they were. But they just started coming forward and saying their names, because they were... And it was my aunts and uncles.
Yeah, because you probably never met some of them.
No, those I had met, and they were
okay.
They were coming forward. But see, my mother was one of 11 children, and she and her brother were the only ones still left alive.
I'm from a family of 11. My mother's from a family of 11, and my grandmother is from a family of 11.
Yeah, but they just came forward to me and said, they were just saying their names, you know, like it's Uncle Buster, you know, they say in the names. And my
so
grandfather, I never met my grandfather, but he was there, her father.
Interesting.
And they all let me know who they were. They let me know who was in the room. So I knew that it was her loved ones from the other side had come. So then that was on Saturday, I think it was. Then on Sunday morning, my brothers and sisters wanted to go to breakfast. And I didn't want to leave my mother. I knew it was close just because of everything that had been happening. Well, on Friday, they'd had me put a morphine patch on her, so she hadn't been conscious. Now, when I took care of her, also, she didn't wear a hearing aid, and she didn't want her hearing aid on. So everything I did was in silence. When she wanted to eat, I knew when she wanted to eat. I knew when she didn't want any more. I knew when she wanted a drink. I just knew. Somehow she communicated, but I didn't hear a voice. I just knew.
So when you saw all those beings coming, what kind of feelings did you have?
Oh, love.
So there was no fear, there was
no... Oh, no, it was love. She was laying there. She was sleeping when they came in, and I was just in
and
the room.
And they stayed, or they just came and left?
No, they stayed.
So all the time afterwards when you come, you still saw them all the time?
No, I just knew they were there. I just
okay.
knew... Yeah, I
so
could
I'm
feel
kind of...
the... To me, the room was crowded when it was just me in there with my mother. The room was crowded because all these beings were there for her. So then on Sunday morning, they wanted me to go eat breakfast with them. And they said, please, you need a break, because they saw I've been taking care of her by myself. And they said, please, you need a break. And my oldest son said, we'll stay with Grandma, he and his wife. They would stay with her. So I finally said, okay. And we were sitting at the table, and we had a great visit and everything. And then all of a sudden, I just felt I should be home. And I said, I need to go home. Well, we'd finished eating and everything. And they said, okay. And then my brothers and sisters were all going to do things, but they took me home. And when I walked up to the door, my son walked to the screen door. It was a screen door on the opposite side, and he just stood there. And he didn't open the door or anything. And he looked at me, and he had this strangest look on his face. And we just stood there looking at each other, and he said, I thought she died. I said, what? And then he opened the door. He goes, Mama, I thought she died. And I said, what do you mean? And he said he was sitting in the room in the chair. He said, and she stopped breathing. Now, her breathing was pretty labored because she was close to death, so it was real shallow. I mean, you could hear every breath. It was every breath was like that. And he said she stopped. He said, I thought she died. He said, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what I was going to do. And he goes, I mean, it was like a couple of minutes, Mom, he said. And all of a sudden she went, and started breathing again. So, and this had happened shortly before we got there. So I'm thinking it's about the same time I felt I needed to leave the restaurant. So then I went in, and I realized that there was a mess that I had to clean up.
Yeah.
And my sister, because there was an odd smell in the room, and my sister came in, and she goes, I'll help you. And then I started, she says, I can't do this. And I said, no, go ahead and go. And so my mother was wearing diapers in, and I had to change her. But I lifted up her arm to move it, and my hand was wet. I mean, my hand had water standing on it after I set her arm down, and I thought, what is this, you know? And then there was this stuff I had to clean up and everything, and then I got her all cleaned up, and it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I went to check, and her eyes were open. So I went and got everybody, and I said, if you want to say goodbye to Mama, you can say it now, because she's awake and her eyes are open, but only one eye really worked. And then one by one, they did go in and say goodbye to her. And then I just knew, it was at the end, I just knew. And so I called everybody in then, and I said, she's leaving. If you want to come in, I said, you don't have to, But if you want to, you can come in and be with her. And everybody came in the room. I thought some people might hang back. But it was all my brothers and sisters but one. He was coming from the United Arab Emirates, so it was taking a long time for him to get there. And some of my children and were in there too. And I knelt down beside her and looked her right in her eye, and she was still breathing like that. And then all of a sudden I felt she was afraid to go. And I thought, what? And then I realized she was afraid for us. She was worried about us. And so
can't you see you and I feeling that way too?
Yeah. And
because,
so I said,
you know,
I told her,
spooky,
I said,
and for them more, and you're concerned that they're, you know, I have a great grandmother that was blind, but she never told her kids. And then after she died, because she told the doctor not to, because she had a stroke.
Yeah, she was.
And then after she died, she said, you know, your mother was blind for a while, mm-hmm. and none of the kids knew.
Yeah, she was all ready to go and everything, and all of a sudden I could feel her just, oh, and she was worried about us, and I said, Mama, your work here is done. You did really good. I said, and we'll be just fine. And then my sister had laid on the bed beside her, and she said, that's right, Mama, Cliff is here. That was my stepdad. You take his hand. He's waiting for you.
No, he was dead or alive?
He was dead.
Okay.
And
now this is what I thought was really interesting when she finally left.
Then she just made a long exhale, and I was looking straight in her eye, and there was a light, and it faded, just dimmer, 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 and it was out. As that exhale ended, the light went out.
In her eye.
In her eye.
Yeah.
And I said, she's gone. And everybody just stood there. And then my oldest brother said, we should mark the time. We should mark the time. So it was 4:25. He said, I have 4:25. And so everybody agreed that it was 4:25. So then I went then to call, well, the mortician lived across the street from us, on the same street, and my son had already gone across the street and told him that she was dying, and so he brought their little van home with him for the mortuary, and he went to tell him that she died, and I went to call the hospice nurses because we were supposed to call. They said, whatever you do, don't call 911, because my mother had the, you know, do not resuscitate, no heroics. She did not want to be resuscitated or anything, and she filled out a form even for them. And so they said, don't call 911, because if you call 911, they must resuscitate.
Okay.
They have to. So then I called her to let her know. So then the doc, she was coming to the house. And I went back in the room, and my middle sister had sat down in the rocking chair in the room. And I went in the room, and I felt, and I said, she's still here. And my sister said, I know that. Because we know that the spirit stays for a while. And, you know, when I made the phone calls, when my son went to talk to the mortician, he said, Mama, why don't you come right away? And the mortician said, are you sure? You know they stay for a while. Now, this is the mortician saying that their spirit stays for a while. When I talked to the hospice nurse, I said, I guess you should come right away or something. And she said, are you sure? You know they stay for a while. Now, that's a hospice nurse and a mortician told me the same thing. That their spirits stay for a while after they die.
Well, you would think that the work that they do, they would hear all the stories.
Well, they would know.
Yeah.
They can probably tell.
Yeah, because that's probably why they're doing that work, because they've
mm-hmm.
come here with special
mm-hmm.
gifts.
So then I went, about different ones were coming up and hugging me, and they were crying and all over the house. I didn't realize my poor husband, my brothers, one of our sons, and had grabbed him, and then as soon as he got him through, over, he was crying so hard, and as soon as he was done with him, my brother grabbed him, and he was comforting him.
Yeah, because, even though we know it's for the best, so final.
Well, you know, though, when that light went out in her eye, in my head, I was just yelling, "We did it! We did it!" I was so excited and happy. We did it. And I meant all of us, because that room was filled with her loved ones from the other side and us from this side.
So now, what did you see, though? I know you shared that.
Well, I came back in two more times, and she was still there. I could just feel her presence. And so then, that was the third time that I went in, I could see her. And she was, like, in her 30s, and she was linked arm in arm with my father on one side and my stepfather on the other. They had their elbows linked. She was in the middle, and they were walking away. And she looked back over her shoulder. I'm going to be emotional, and smiled at me.
Yes.
I could just see it. And I recognized the suit she was wearing. I'd seen pictures of her in it and everything. But they were all about in their 30s.
Yeah, I've heard 35. I've heard that a lot of people say that. Mm-hmm. That's about the age we look when, you know,
right.
we know that.
That was like a happy time, maybe. Maybe that's the age you go to.
Well, my daughters are around that age, and it is just the age where they're leaving the real young and they're entering, you know, it's like the perfect age, I think. But I think, you know, you are blessed you could see that, but the real of us when we leave is we're like just like a light.
Well, see, then after she'd been gone, I don't know, a week or so, 2 weeks or so, I was laying in my bed, and in my bed there was a hallway that went out into our main hallway for my bedroom. And all of a sudden, I knew she was peeking. She was bent over and was peeking into my room with a smile on her face. And I said, "I see you, Mama."
Really?
And the next thing, her presence was standing right next to me.
Now you saw her, like, what she looked like?
Just feel her presence. Yeah, in my mind, I could see what she looked like, but I could feel her. It's more you can feel. It's hard to explain. I could feel her presence.
Yeah, well, I understand that. I visited my sister Barbara not long ago. She's about 8 hours from here. And I walked in her house, and I said, Grandma's place. And I went to my dear intuitive friend a day or so later, and she said my grandmother was with me.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother favored my sister.
Uh-huh.
So it made sense to me, you know, that's what I felt. I thought maybe she had her furniture style, you know.
Yeah.
And I realized she was just there with the three of us.
Yeah, you could just feel it.
Yeah, and I mean, I said it out loud. I said, this looks like Grandma's. You know, and what it really was, I felt.
Right.
But to me, I said.
And you kind of, but you feel and see.
Yeah,
like
it was
at the
really
same time.
Strong. And then again, I went to my intuitive friend, and she says, "Your grandmother's with you." So she.
Yeah.
It was a day or so later, so it was quite interesting. So.
Yeah, and she could feel it and see. It's hard to explain how you see, because it's more like you just. No.
Well, like me, when I've seen the people that have passed on, I see their aura.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one was just a huge, sparkling
aura.
And I found out because he was obviously a very illuminated, very powerful. So that's how I have. But I also have heard them. Of course, we see them in dreams.
Right.
You know, at least I have. And because we all have our own truth.
Right.
Like we feel them. See them, hear them, dream of them.
And I think it's any way that they can communicate is the means that you pick up on with.
And I believe the reason that these individuals did that with me was because I believe this and they know they could connect. Mm-hmm. Now, I have many, many loved ones that they think this stuff is all hogwash, you know. And so how can you reach them, you know? You know what I'm trying to say? So just like you and I, if I passed on tomorrow, I know you would respond, so I would go to you.
Right.
And so I do believe that, just like I believe if you believe that God can reach you with dreams, you will be reached with dreams.
Right. And usually I don't like to go to funerals, and I don't go to very many, but when I'm there, people always go to their own funeral.
Yeah.
And
now you share that. You see people at the funeral.
Yeah, I can see. Sometimes I've had to call them to their funeral because maybe one lady was being cremated at one location at the same time her memorial service was going on. And she'd had Alzheimer's, so she was kind of confused. And I called her. I brought her to the funeral. Called her to the funeral where everybody was.
So she was lost, like she was confused.
Yeah, she was confused.
Yes, my one daughter was told that she has she's a keeper of the gates. And guess what she does for part-time? She works at the old folk home.
Oh.
So her job is to help people leave. Now, I've been told that myself, and I've done a lot of elderly private care. But there's one quick little story, because we only have like about 4 minutes left here, but there's an individual that came into the world, and it was just really strange how my husband and I popped in at the hospital because my daughter was there. And then when this little guy died, he only lived a few months, they called when I was there. So I spent time with him when he was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that that was part of we obviously had some kind of contract, this little guy.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's just not normal to be there when he's born and then to be there when he dies.
No, that's, there are no coincidences.
So like you, I have learned to trust and believe, so I talk and I actually help people leave. And I have many stories since I've been doing that. And in fact, it's strange how I hear about these deaths sometime, but then I know it's not really strange because then when I have the quiet time, I talk to them and I ask them and I help them go to the
right. See, then my mother now is a transition angel.
Okay.
So she helps people from the other side, especially the children, because a lot of children don't have loved ones that have already crossed over.
What a wonderful job to have.
And that's what she does, because remember, she lost a child.
Right, right.
And I think that's why, but I call her. A lot of times when I know someone's having trouble or needs help, who's just crossed over or going to, I call her.
Wonderful.
To help them from that side.
I know you really helped my mother a lot when you shared your experiences with her, because she's lost a son, a husband, you know, just and a grandson just in a few years' time, and that's really been a blessing and a lot of help for her.
Oh.
And you know, then we share it with the rest of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Just like my one brother.
Just understand, they are just fine. In fact, they are wonderful.
They're better off.
Yes.
Most people are, like even a couple people in my family that killed themselves, it was because they were emotionally hurting so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So they're better off. And they did.
Oh, they're happy.
They did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
So, you know, we've only got a little time here, so I want to share with those that are listening that if you would like to connect, because we have many things to offer, you can get on our internet, knowingspirit.com. We have a lot to offer. We have school. We have radio programs. We have if you want, check us out. We have a lot of things that you can enjoy. And if you just want to email me, my email address is lavonnef@wiktel.com. That's lavonnef@wiktel.com. And I enjoyed talking with you today, Eunice, and I thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And all of you that are listening, We send all the blessings we can. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Knowing Spirit, a show about healing the soul so you can change your life. Please visit our website at www.knowingspirit.org. And if you would like to be a guest on our program or book a private consultation with Reverend Shreese Thorne, please call us at 1-815-483-1141. Until then, this is Reverend Shreese sending you light and love on your journey home.